And hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. And I had a conversation with Omar Tarek, the head of growth for Destiny Engage, the omnichannel customer experience software company. And we talked about, well, what is growth? Growth marketing used to be called growth hacking. We talked about some of the intangibles, the cultural dimensions that need to be in place for growth really to take off. And also got into some, you know, some more personal growth and how it's really necessary for the space to enable personal growth for a company to grow. And that was just really delightful. So, hey, Omar, why would you think this is really valuable for people to listen to it?
Well, hello. If you're wondering what's going on in the mind of a growth leader, just 5 months after they've joined a company that's undergoing a lot of transformation, check out this conversation. There's a lot of valuable nuggets in there.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where we learn about strategies and tactics to succeed through simplicity, with your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. I'm having a conversation with Omar Tarek, who is the head of growth, director of growth. He's doing the growth work for Destiny Engage, organization I worked with up until recently and still supporting emotionally and physically, however I can. And Omar has been working, yeah, very closely with that group, I think for about 6 months. He'll correct me if I'm wrong. And transforming the group into what used to be like a more purely sales-driven organization into a product-driven organization. And because he comes from the growth marketing, growth hacking, growth space, I thought it'd be just delightful to have an open conversation with such a professional to unpack, you know, like what is growth as a capability in organization, and maybe differentiate it from other things like sales and marketing and delivery, and have some fun with it. So Omar, welcome. Can you share with us, you know, kick us off with just a brief, what does Omar do?
Sure. Thanks for the introduction, Chris. I'd like to start by asking, how are you today?
I'm delighted. I'm already delighted because we've been talking for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so before this, warming up, and it's always a delight talking with you. So I'm already happy. How else am I doing today? Doing well. I'm getting ready for vacation holiday next week, and probably my to-do list is still too full. So I have a little anxiety on, how am I going to get through it all? But I'll ignore all that right now and just engage with you for the next 30 minutes or so. So, and I'll, okay, right back at you, Omar. How are you? Love What's it. Happening in you today?
Well, I'm very present with what we're doing. I'm excited for this conversation. It's my first time being on a podcast, so I'm definitely looking forward to how this will unfold, all the interesting conversations. And I appreciate the fancy introduction you've given about me. I've been with Destiny Engage for 5 months and not 6 months. But getting there to half a year. So I'm very present and excited and looking forward.
Yeah, you've been there for 5 months, but I really enjoyed when you were first orienting with the company, and we met up inside of a sky bar up in Amsterdam, got to know each other. I was like, oh wow, this guy's great. I would really love to spend time with this guy. So and here we are, continuing to spend time with each other. So I maybe if you can just kick us off going back to what is it that you do? How do you describe the growth leadership role? What are you doing there?
Well, that's a great question, Chris. And echoing to what you're saying, when we first met at the Sky Bar, I think that's when I was like, that's the company I'm going to be joining. So it's definitely mutual. Back then, I didn't know what exactly was I going to be doing in Destiny Engage until I spoke with our managing director, who's the founder and CEO of Tactful AI, which is now Destiny Engage. And he asked me to be the growth lead for the organization. And his challenge was, we just got acquired by a European leader. They had presence in Middle East and Africa, and they got acquired by a European company, and they needed to build presence in Europe. But they needed to do that in a systematic approach. If I would even break it down more in a predictable and repeatable approach, which is the dream of every company. Every company wants to have some sort of a predictable, repeatable engine that delivers growth and delivers results. So that was the high level challenge, and that's what I entered with that mindset. How can I establish that engine? So that happened. But when you get in the company and you actually get into the weeds of things, you realize that, well, whatever worked in the past will not necessarily work where you are. So that's where I would say for every leader or every growth manager who joins an organization, they just need to be pragmatic and practical about the situation of the company they're joining, and what's the best approach, or what's the best motion that can help this company move forward. So that's what I've been trying to figure out in the past 5 months. I'd love to hear your thoughts on growth. What's growth from you, in your opinion?
Well, when I first was confronted with what was then called growth hacking, that was when Growth Tribe, the training company in the Netherlands, was really championing that. And that was just mind-blowing as far as what the possibilities are. And the way I would describe it is the origin of growth hacking, and there was a book called Hacking Growth coming out of Silicon Valley. And basically, it was for smaller startups, oftentimes software companies, to acquire customers in creative ways in order to compete with the massive organizations with large budgets. And so that's where the concept of hacking came from. I think the industry's moved on since then in the last 10 years, and growth hacking isn't really a term. Growth marketing has kind of even dropped, and now it's just growth. And I really liked what you said with systematic, so predictable, sustainable, ideally scalable. So instead of looking at how to hit one customer at a time, how can you create a system based on your knowledge of what the ideal customer is, providing value to that person quickly, perhaps in the form of some sort of micro commitments, and actually, provide a path for them to buy your service, and then, and then ideally roll into some sort of customer success structure, and just continue focusing on adding value to that, to the life of that customer. And then there's lots of tactics. There's psychological dimensions to this. There's data analytics dimensions to this. There's it's just a fascinatingly fun space. Like how can you how can you attract customers in the most effective way that is the most appropriate for them as well? So I don't know. That's my sort of novice description of what I would consider growth to be.
Think it's a great description, and I love that there's three terminologies that you've mentioned, and kind of the evolution of how this whole thing came together, right? You're saying when you were first introduced to growth, it was relevant for really small companies or startups that are just trying to find a way to a creative way to kind of acquire an early adopters, a group of customers. And that's how it started, but then it started kind of evolving towards what we've known as growth marketing. And that's where growth professionals started thinking more about how can I learn about my customer group, their pains and gains, and how can I deliver more top funnel results or metrics to impact that. And eventually growth marketers would focus more on awareness so yeah, brand awareness, lead generation, without strong emphasis on the entire funnel. But that has evolved as well to just growth. and all of a sudden just growth. And that evolution is basically what captured the entire funnel, right? Like growth professionals started thinking, hey, I need to deliver bottom line. I need to deliver either acquired customers or a revenue target. And that's when it started kind of formulating this as a domain, as a function. Growth is not just an activity or a tactic. Growth is actually a strategic domain in a company. So just like breaking down that evolution, I think is a great way to look at growth, because if you think about growth hacking, is it really applicable for a company that's more than 70 employees or 80 employees, and not aligned around where they want to go, and you just have like a team of two growth hackers trying to find the next hack that's going to deliver results? It's not that relevant in my opinion. So I love how you broke it down. And I totally agree with what you're saying.
One of the things that charmed me when we were having our initial conversations was, if I remember right, we were talking about generating leads, and you were very firm to say, well, leads are nice, but we should also focus on actually converted sales. So growth isn't only just leads. Like, yeah, well, okay, that's where the actual value comes from, at least the value capture for the company. I think there's the part of the hacking culture that I still like to see in growth organizations is this experimentation and failure culture, the space. Because if you operationalize it too much and you say, okay, well, this is the growth process too fast, then you can be really killing of the innovation. And one thing I learned from Growth Tribe was that they had these failure boards, that every sprint they would actually, but it, and they adopted really a Scrum approach. Okay, what are the hypothesis? What are we going to test? How are we going to refine it? What are we going to fail? Celebrate the failures. And when I helped a fashion brand here in the Netherlands with their data strategy and architecture, I was bringing a lot of that growth concepts in, and driven by the pirate funnel, and the pirate funnel, which is, people haven't heard of
Very
it, just
common.
research pirate funnel, but it's called the pirate funnel because it's arr, arr, matey. So it's awareness, acquisition, activation, retention, revenue,
Retention.
referral.
Referral, yeah.
And I really like, so awareness down to referral. So even after they bought, how are they referring? If that's the scope of a growth team, I really like that. And then the question is, okay, what is the one dimension of that pirate funnel that we're going to optimize now? And what's the hypothesis? And what hacks and what tricks? And then if something works, then double down on it, embed it, operationalize it, and keep cranking that wheel.
Now, I love that you mentioned the pirate funnel and experiments and how to transform an organization to be more driven by data and by experiments. But back to your point around the pirate funnel and if we would run experiments, which part of the funnel are we optimizing for? To get there, you require a big maturity curve. And I would say organizations that are operating in that way, where they have ongoing experiments, where they know which part of the funnel they're optimizing for, I think they've been doing growth for at least 2 to 3 years. Because if I would reflect on my personal journey, I've just joined 5 months ago. Those were all great things to talk about, right? Like what tactics are we going to use to deliver leads or qualified leads or even potential trials? And you start having those conversations, but if you get stuck in those conversations, what you don't realize is that you might be missing out on revenue. And you gotta find that balance of, am I experimenting top funnel, mid funnel, bottom funnel? And what if I'm experimenting top funnel, but my sales team is not aligned with that? Or my product team is not aligned, so we're driving trials, but none of those trials are converting. So the biggest challenge for me was around alignment, was around getting a motion in place. So what I would say before even for premature organizations that are trying to be growth driven, I would say don't jump immediately into what experiments you're going to launch, into how you're going to acquire leads. I'd say do an internal check, an internal reality check. and ask yourself, what is the most appropriate go-to-market motion for the phase that we're in as a company? Consider the teams you have, consider the resources you have, and make sure that you're aligned. Like, your first objective is to get those resources and those teams aligned on one objective. And when it comes to go-to-market motions, there are different go-to-market motions out there. There are different methodologies: the sales-led, product-led, content-led, partner-led, and companies tend to use a mix of both. There's product-led sales, there's product-led content, and those are all great things. But you need to make sure that your resources internally can fulfill that motion and align the resources towards that motion. And then you start getting into the tactics of where we're going to optimize, et cetera, because then you have one big force going in that direction. So to your point, I do feel like a lot of growth leaders, when they join, they jump immediately into the tactics. Like, what am I going to do to acquire leads? What am I going to do to qualify those leads? But they would need to take a step back and think about the strategic objective of the company. Is it a startup that's trying to hit a specific ARR number? So they need to be sales driven because they have a minimum contract value that they need to attain. Or is it a company that's just launching a new market and they just need to acquire a lot of users, a volume of users? Evaluate that strategy and assign a motion, like align people around motion that makes sense, and start going for
Yeah,
it.
I think soon I'll ask, because we did some what I felt was pretty nice work around alignment using the simple business design canvas, and we did a lot of workshops around that. But and I just want to pull out for people the amount of change that. Tactful AI was acquired just over a year ago in May 22. About a year later, you had rebranded to Destiny Engage under European head office, flagship brand. You had refactored the architecture. You had republished a more simple, more narrow definition of the of the actual product. You had relaunched the website and support portals. You had, delightful for me, you've launched a podcast called Engage that I hosted for a bit,
Yeah,
and I'll put a link to
thanks
that,
for
so if people
that.
want to listen to that, it's Engage is the podcast by Destiny Engage, talking to experts about customer experience and customer engagement. You have adopted much more safe, so scaled agile methods. You've introduced new functions like growth. The team grew from like 40 to over 80. So everything was shifting, and the invitation to Omar was go find ways to grow. So every organization has turmoil and change, and this was a bit overdrive. What things would do you think need to be in place for someone who's leading growth in a high change environment in order to survive that and succeed? So like what are the foundation, earlier, I think you even called them the intangibles. Like, what does the environment need to look like in order for this person to even have a chance to succeed? And then maybe we'll get into some alignment workshops and maybe some tactics for that people can pick up and run with.
I love this question. I think it's super important to think about what's the first step a leader is going to take when they join a new company, especially if it's undergoing a lot of transformation, a lot of change. And I've personally made the mistake, right? Like, of jumping into what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? But then you realize that you need to pause and think more about the intangibles. Think more that as a leader, your primary job is to align people around a specific goal. But where does that goal come from? Well, it probably comes from the CEO or the top management, and the top management probably get that from their investors, or from the shareholders of the company. So what you need to evaluate is there a clear goal coming from leadership that's communicated that we want to achieve that towards the end of the year? And is there enough room from leadership to innovate and to find ways that to achieve that goal? Now you just evaluate leadership on a higher level, right? Now, the second step is you think about resources. Are my resources aligned enough towards that goal? Are people aware of the goal? Is there miscommunication between leadership and the rest of the company? And I would say this is where you start as a leader. You start evaluating those intangibles. You start making sure that you're enabling people, your people for growth. Because if you're not enabling your people for growth, what you're going to end up doing is not grow. And if you start just thinking about growth, how am I going to do that? What tactics am I going to use? What platforms? Then you get a stuck. Then you get stuck. So yeah, I love the question you're bringing because it definitely touches on the intangible side of things that you cannot really measure. How can you measure alignment? It takes time to get people aligned. But how do you?
Oh, I know how to measure alignment.
Well, how do you measure alignment? I'd be curious to know more about that.
When you're interacting with your fellow work colleagues and you're talking about the future, how do you feel? So for me, the emotional guidance system that if you're feeling uncomfortable, like literally feeling uncomfortable, that I'm feeling disconnected. That is the best indication of alignment. And if you're talking with
Wow.
someone who, and you're talking with them and you're kind of in the groove and you're like, wow, you know, okay, I feel like we're going the same direction and that's exciting me and I'm on board with this. That is the best measure of alignment for me.
Wow.
And so when I do alignment workshops, you know, with the Simple Business Design Canvas as a framework, I'm always asking, typically, always in the beginning and the end of the sessions, and sometimes in the middle, how are you feeling? Because that question itself unlocks perspectives that, you know, because people are very typically very intellectually engaged. Okay, you know, here's the metric, it's how we're going to measure. Now, how do you feel about that? Like, what? That's not what? Am I allowed to feel something now? And usually the misalignment or the discomfort is indicating something. Perhaps even intuitive that they haven't put their words to. So.
I just love how you measured alignment with emotions. I wasn't aware how do people measure alignment or how alignment is measured in general. But now that you're saying that, I totally agree with you. Because you can have the leadership in a company saying as much as they want, this is what we need to hit, those are the numbers that we need to achieve. But if they don't start with how do you feel about what you're doing, does it make sense? Does it align with the tangible metrics that we're speaking about? This is actually how you measure alignment. And I've personally experienced it firsthand. I've had a chance to work with a great leader in my previous company. And he would start every meeting with, how are you? How are you doing? How are you feeling? And I've been copying him. I'm using the same tactic with my team. Just making sure that people are emotionally aligned with the business they're working in my opinion, is the foundation for growth. It's not
Or
setting them up.
yeah, or even if I love that to check in, do some sort of check in and sort of connecting moment. Because are they emotionally present at that time? You know, so that's why I loved your answer with how you're doing. You said I'm present. I'm like, ah, that's the greatest gift. But you know, so anything could have happened. You could have had a bad breakfast or you know, anything could have happened that could be causing angst or something on your mind. And if someone says, yeah, you know what, you know, this and that happened in my life, and I'm still bothered by it. And then you could even ask, okay, well, is now a good time for this? Or Is there anything we can do to serve your need, now, or are you okay to proceed? And I find that really creates a level of safety for people that they've been heard. People are aware how they're feeling. People can adjust their behavior accordingly. Yeah, no, that's the humanness of this whole thing.
Humanizing experiences in business is talked a lot about. It's talked about a lot in sales. Like you hear a lot of sales professionals saying people buy from people, or you hear HR professionals saying people work with people. They don't join a brand, they join a company, and they leave for a bad manager. But when it comes to leadership, you do clearly see when a company is not putting its people first versus a company that puts its people first. And that's what makes the difference. You have to question your leadership. You have to first evaluate whether that leadership is human-centric and making sure that there's enough room for its employees to grow and innovate, or if it's a leadership or the leadership style is more targets driven, metrics driven, we'll do whatever it takes to get where we need to be. Because in my opinion, that's kind of a vicious cycle if you don't start with the human, with the human experience at heart.
Yeah, I know I have, this is kind of an unplanned tangent, but let's go with it because this is a lovely conversation. The simple business design framework that you used, with your management team and many other people is often started from a very intellectual perspective. And so my work in Ebullient is simple business design, but what I'm finding is there's this whole other more important foundational emotional connection. And this is what I'm working title leading from love. So if you simplify from love, then you know magic can happen, if you will, in an organization. But what I'm also finding is unpacking this, what does leading from love mean? And I'm curious what your opinion is, that I'm finding that there's three different perspectives there, and all are true, all are valuable, and all should be considered. There's a transactional approach. So what do the metrics say? What are the business results? Because it's a business and it needs to run. There's a relational approach. So what is the relations between me and you or people in the company, and also your relations to your ecosystem, your shareholders, your customers. And then I call it the intuitive approach, meaning, am I loving myself? Am I comfortable in my skin? And particularly when hard decisions need to be taken, what I'm currently challenging and championing is with people is hold all three of these in some sort of grace, meaning, hey, the transactional perspective is very important and true, equally to the relational and also the intuitional. And what I'm finding is if people are able to embrace those three different perspectives, and they could all be in conflict and in tension with each other. But if you're able to hold them all, then it does evolve into, I believe, better decisions, and more importantly, better decisions that people can live with in and be comfortable in their skin. I've never mentioned that on the podcast before, so I'm curious, when I share that, what happens to you? Like, what is your reaction to those words?
I think you're a subject matter expert, right? When it comes to leadership styles, when it comes to alignment work, you run workshops with a lot of leaders. And when you've mentioned those keywords, I couldn't help but agree, because what you're saying is they're equally important. And what I mean by the intangibles versus tangibles is that you don't necessarily value one above the other, but you make sure that one is not undermined, or one is kind of dominating the other. So back to your point on the three words you've used, the metrics. Definitely a leader without a good eye on what metrics needs to be measured. How will that then? How will those metrics deliver the company objective overall? Will not get to a specific destination because they don't know how to measure what they're doing. But before starting with the metrics, you got to make sure that on a relational level, between the different teams, between the different departments, between the leaders and their teams, there's good intentions. There's willingness to work and collaborate towards a specific objective. And before that, you got to ask yourself, are my employees doing well? Am I doing well? Am I taking care of myself? Am I projecting that towards my employees, or I'm just projecting stress and I'm projecting overload and I'm projecting overwork? So definitely finding the balance between those three levels is key for success. And you cannot just focus on one and ignore the other. You just, as a leader, you have to be smart enough to know when do you play one card versus the other card. When the team is stressed, you focus more on the relationship, you focus more on the intentions, you bring an insight about the metrics. When the team is relaxed, you talk about metrics. We need to hit this and that. So I totally agree with you that using them three together is a great way of leading, and making sure you're working towards a specific objective. I'm curious, how do you see an example? Can you give an example of someone or yourself when you're able to navigate between those three layers,
Well, absolutely. Just last week, I was in Switzerland and working with a colleague in a leadership development coaching network. I'll leave the specifics out, but she mentioned that she was considering a change from her current role, and she was losing sleep. She didn't feel good about it. She was feeling a bit burned out, and so for me, that was an immediate trigger to say, okay. Going back to that emotional guidance system, okay, something's happening with this person that is out of alignment, with themselves. And so I just politely said, well, hey, I'm working on this concept, leading from love. Are you open to play with it and see how it works? And in that conversation, she described all three of those perspectives. And what was joyful for me, it was by the, and we did it over two sort of meals. What was joyful for me was before I could even get to the end, she already said, you know what I would love to do? I would actually like to do this, this, and this, and this other sort of path. I was like, we're done. I think if you hold those three things in, I want to say grace, I'm not sure if that's right, but as truth, not as higher or lower priority, but just equally, and say, okay, and I could choose different. I could choose to stay. I could choose to change something. I could choose to leave. And if you embrace all of those things, then
You just figure it out yourself.
instead of fighting against them, you embrace them, and then my belief is something will emerge. So that was a great example.
Love that.
And I think something that emerged in me when you were sharing back just a bit ago was, I think there's also an aspect of forgiveness, meaning if you wish upon others to hold these dimensions for themselves, then realize they might make different decisions. At some point, you might make a decision based on pure transactional because you've assessed your feelings and you think that's right. Sometimes you might sacrifice a little bit of something for a relational. And sometimes you have just your own needs, and you're saying, right now I'm not checking into this because, and no is a perfect answer without even a justification. It's like, no, I'm not available for this right now. And forgive, assume positive intent and say, all right, you are navigating as a person, as a perfect human and a professional. I've got your back. And I think if everyone is doing that more, then the workplace would just be much more joyful.
I love that you bring up forgiveness here, because I'm someone who's firsthand involved with bottom line impact, with growing the company, with revenue. And I'm not the only one, right? There are a lot of sales professionals out there who are also feeling the same. A lot of growth professionals out there who are directly impacting the revenue of the company. And when that's at stake, it's usually very hard to forgive yourself for not hitting the results or for not getting to a place where you thought you need to be. You have not met the objective. And if leadership do not change their approach towards we need to hit that goal or we need to hit that target and become more like, how are you feeling? What's your intuition towards where we're going? And you need to detach from the outcome, and you're not a bad leader if you don't hit the goal. Start voicing more of those opinions. That's when you get to a place where you can say, okay, I actually forgive myself for not getting to a place that I didn't even put on myself. It was given to me.
Yeah.
This target, I did not
So
set
I was about to say this. It
it
was probably an imposed target that you never thought was realistic in the first place. So yeah, maybe. I don't
So in
know.
that domain, I empathize a lot with
Well,
leaders in that domain, and I think forgiving themselves is a great gift for success that we need to practice more.
forgiving themselves and forgiving others. And I love that sort of you put things a bit in an order. If someone is respecting and caring for themselves so they can respect and care for others, then together you can achieve those results. And that's the way I believe it can be done. And all three of those things are equally valuable and true. So imagine there was this fabric in place, and we don't have too much time left in the conversation, but imagine that emotional fabric was in place in an organization, these intangibles, and someone who is running a mid-size organization that hasn't really heard of or thought of growth as a capability. What are a couple of things that where they could start? Like, hey, if you want to start getting into a growth mindset with a few strategies and tactics, what would be a good place to go? I'll put it throughout there, and I'll put the link on there. There's the Hacking Growth book, which is sort of the classic which kicked all this off. But is there something that you, from your experience, you would recommend people, this would be a great place to start.
I wouldn't refer to a specific book. I would refer to my personal experience. I would say always start with understanding the different go-to-market motions, the product-led versus sales-led versus partner-led versus content-led. Evaluate which one or a couple of motions are most suitable for your business needs, in terms of the objective you need to hit, whether that's specific revenue amount, whether that's a specific volume of customers, whether that's just brand awareness. Once you've done that, build a funnel around that motion. Build whether that's a pirate funnel, whether that's a life cycle stage funnel where marketing gets leads and passed on to sales. Just make sure you've identified the motion according to the company situation and not what you think is best. And from there,
I gotta ask, of those different channels, if you will, or main strategies, you had a better word for it. You said choose one or two, one or more. My intuition says choose the one that is your primary go-to-market, I guess, or would you recommend to have multiple? Because for me that might be diffusing. I think obviously have the ability to sell through other channels, but how important do you believe it is to have a clearly aligned and communicated, this is our primary go-to-market channel?
I'd like to refrain from being absolute on a specific motion, because in a lot of situations, companies are trying to grow because they're undergoing some sort of transformation. There's transformation happening. And when transformation is happening, one suitable approach is not always the best approach, because that approach could be where management or leadership wants to take the company, but is the company ready for it today? To be more concrete, when I joined Destiny Engage, I was told that we're going for product-led growth. We want to acquire users organically. We want those users to self-serve and check out, and all without like a sales touch. And that's where leadership wanted to take the company. But then looking at the company situation and the resources we have, is that really possible? It's not. So we had to adopt our approach to product-led sales or product-led partnerships. And that's why I say it's not always just one. And if you try to make it just one, usually you're ignoring some other resources in the company or ignoring, and it of course it depends on the, it's always situational. But yeah, that's my take on it. I don't think sticking to absolutes will serve companies well, just because when you're going through growth, you're probably going through transformation. And when transformation's happening, there are different things that you're not taking into consideration. And that was a personal learning that I had to
Just be
go
open to adapt and based on constraints on the transformation on the resources.
What's your
Great.
take? Why do you think choosing one strategy and going for it is more effective? I'm curious to hear it from you.
Resource utilization is just my thought from an investment path. So if you if you simplify it and say, well, there's a product-led growth, meaning the product is the salesperson and people, experience that and they have the prompts in the product and they're able to sort of upsell themselves within the product. Or if it's a partner, so actually you don't even have your own sales force and actually you're relying on partners to do the sales and maybe even embed it in their own other product or sales-led. You have a sales team, account managers that are out there hunting and gathering and farming. My guess is your ideal customer, which could be changing, has a preference based on the context of your company. And by context of company, I'm going to talk about like closing the gap or closing the chasm, crossing the chasm, actually. That if you're a very early innovative company that you're selling to innovative thinkers, what is the best way to reach out to those innovative thinkers in that space? And that could be sales or partners or product. But make that decision, I guess, is my point. And then once you've built a couple of referenceable cases and you can start getting some more early adopters, after the innovators, maybe those people have a different way of engaging. And maybe, okay, maybe, you're able to exploit partners initially because they had the leads that you could exploit or that you could at least talk to and expose your product or service to. And then maybe once you've gotten to the next group of customers, maybe sales is more appropriate. So I know my feeling is to not make a decision once and for all forever. I think that would be a disastrous, but have some conversation alignment on, okay, this is how we are going to look at it now. And keep engaging and talking to each other. And then once we feel, hey, we need to shift to another channel because either that one didn't work or that one's fine, but we can't scale it, then have that conversation. So in me, it's still to know what the primary go-to-market is that you're investing at that time until you need to change it, is my feeling. Because if you have limited resources and you're pulling in four different directions, then that could be a strategy. It just requires a tremendous amount of coordination in order not to do things that are wasteful and you're not pulling your product and your development teams in four different directions at the same time, because it would require a pretty high level of maturity and sophistication and coordination, I guess. That's what happened in my mind.
Yeah, and you're spot on, and you totally have a point that in terms of resource utilization, you need to have that strategic direction clearly communicated and getting the alignment around it. But also, you mentioned another great point, which is flexibility to adapt and flexibility to change. So maybe I wasn't too clear by what I meant with like combining different motions. It's not like you're going to go product-led, but also sales-led. It's more around having flexibility to combine two strategies into one, which is very common industry practice. A lot of companies are doing product-led sales, Because they built sales armies and now they're realizing, hey, if I need to scale that, I need to double the headcount, which is going to double my costs, which is not what my investors want. So, how do I transition to product led? Well, you can't really transition to product led because you've got a sales army behind you who's going to be frustrated and annoyed. So, you get the salespeople and tell them, hey, we're going to go to product led sales. Well, what is product led sales? And then you start having that conversation. And I love how you just talked about that because that ties back to what we were talking about earlier, which is the relational and intentional. If you're not aligning your resources, if you're not clearly communicating where you want to go, the metrics will not just support whatever that decision is or whatever that direction is. So, yeah, I totally agree with your thinking.
Lovely. So, Omar, any final tip, tactic, message for people that are like, hey, this growth thing is interesting to us. I will put in the show notes. You have very graciously made yourself available. So, in the show notes, there's a link that if anyone wants to just have a coffee and chat and talk about growth in general with you, even if I guess even if they're not necessarily interested in buying Destiny Engage solutions. Be nice if they are, but you're open and available. So I'll put the link in the show notes that if people want to have a chat, it's there. But is there anything that you'd like to make sure that you've implanted in people's head that hey, if you're interested in this growth thing, make sure you consider whatever.
Well, thanks for giving me the chance. I would say make sure you're investing in your personal growth and you're prioritizing self-care over everything else, and everything will start falling in place.
That's a amazing tip for growth, meaning focus on your personal growth. Okay, I'm gonna pull on that one. Sorry, people, if you're listening. I have a belief that and I spoke to someone on an episode recorded yesterday, Frank Van Hoef, and I don't know if it was in the episode, but he stated that he did not understand why maximizing shareholder value was the main reason for a business to exist. He just didn't get it. And I've heard recently that actually that was a bit accidental, meaning I think it was Friedman or somebody, some economist who happened to write it in a book at a time, and it just stuck. There's no truth there. It's just the fact that we've read the book and we repeated it so much in MBAs that it became sort of de facto truth. But there is no truth there. It makes sense, but the transactional part is important. But we, as we talked, the transactional part, of course, you need to grow your business and maximize shareholder value because they want the revenue. But there's also the relational and I would call the intuitional. And when people talk about we need to transform the business and we need to grow the business, if you follow that chain, that means you need to transform the people and you need to grow the people, or you need to create the space because you can never transform someone else. You need to create the space for these people to check in to some sort of change or transformation and some sort of personal development and growth. And my belief is there's no way your company will transform or grow beyond its current limits without doing that. And so I would like to challenge Friedman. I challenge you, Friedman, that the most important reason for a business to exist is to enable the personal growth of the individuals involved in it. And I'm sticking to that.
Think that's the best way to end this, and I'd like to not add anything after that.
Wow, awesome. Omar Tarek, with Destiny Engage, people can find more about that at dstnyengage.com. I will also put the link to the Engage podcast, which is experts talking about customer engagement and omni-channel communications. So if people have like a web care team and you're getting communications from your customers over WhatsApp and Facebook and phone calls and emails, you want that
All
all
that good
centralized
stuff.
in one place. And there's some AI behind that for analytics and reporting and agent assist. So prompting people, your agents with the right answer and the next best action. It's really, really cool stuff. Check that out at Destiny Engage and learn more about it on the podcast. And I'll also put the contact details for Omar because he's, as I said, he's super passionate about growth and is very open to talking and sparring with people about this, I feel, just incredible topic. So Omar, thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris. What a lovely episode and a lovely conversation. It's been my honor. It's been a pleasure. So thank you. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for listening. Visit ebullient.com to download the Simple Business Design Framework. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.